Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I love what I'm doing now. I'm really enjoying it. I'm very happy. And with that comes this looming dread of if it did go away, I don't think I'd be good enough to keep, like, continue.
I'm just pointing it out. This is a picky eater's nightmare.
Do you? It doesn't piss me off. I mean, do what you gotta do. You know, get the likes, get the clicks, do what makes you feel good.
Fills me with unbridled rage. I never wanted to work in YouTube. I didn't grow up watching YouTube. This stuff is all very foreign to me, and it's very strange to now be thrust into this culture of strange YouTube drama. Like, these are people that I've never heard of.
Welcome back to Assumptions. My name is Arasha Lalani. You might recognize me from my podcast Spitball or my appearances on Smosh. I was also on a previous episode of Assumptions, so I was in the hot seat myself with some Smosh cast members. But today I am joined by some members of Mythical Kitchen. Let's go around and introduce ourselves, shall we?
I am Josh Scherer, and I am a member of Mythical Kitchen.
I'm Trevor. I am also a member of Mythical Kitchen.
I'm Nicola Knighty, and I'm the senior culinary producer at Mythical.
Damn, why'd you change it up?
What do you mean?
It could have all sort of flowed.
No, we're not the Three Musketeers.
Like an old
here.
Captain, my captain situation.
No.
And today, we'll be addressing your assumptions. Our first assumption, it's getting harder and harder to make unique dishes for Rhett and Link.
False. Mm-hmm.
Very false.
I mean, there are like an infinite number of combinations of food.
Yeah, the way I see it is, people think a lot of the times that, like, it's just a small group of, like, food people doing this. It's just, like, maybe five people in the kitchen. But in reality, we have a huge team of writers, producers. It's so collaborative. I think the thing that always trips me up is people that come to us with, like, puns. Like, hey, we're doing Will It Bagel. Can you make a plagal? And I'm like, what's that? And then they're like, oh, you know, from the plagues of the Bible. Can you transfer that into, like, a bagel and feed it to Rhett and Link? And we're like,
well, I think that's a pretty good argument for we're running out of ideas.
but to be fair, if it's talked through and it's executed properly, absolutely. So I kind of like the punny stuff.
Wait,
the silly
punny stuff. Did someone have to kill their firstborn?
Yes, that was actually what it was. Yeah. Craigslist, we just found something.
Oh, God.
No, that's been done before. Yeah.
For me, I feel like it was always the gross foods that were harder to come up with. Because, you know, you can only use pig anus so many times. Mm-hmm. How do you keep incorporating it? Like, there's an endless number of, like, really cool, creative, fun, good dishes. But it's always like, okay, how do we make something bitter in a different way? Yeah, how do we make something really grossly salty in a different way?
Well, the crazy thing that nobody really talks about is nobody wants to see gross foods anymore.
And
we kind of stopped doing it. And it wasn't, like, part of that was conscious, right? Where we didn't want to be known as the
gross food people.
And that actually leads into our next assumption really well. They wish they could make normal foods and show their true skills.
We do.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Trevor made a perfect beef Wellington for Gordon Ramsay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is delicious. Seasoned beautifully. Oh, my God.
Well, I haven't cooked since then. That was the peak. I stopped cooking after that. No, it is. Especially with last meals, I found. Because, you know, Mythical Kitchen, we made a lot of really good food. And GMM, we make a lot of really good food. And some really fun fusion things from around the world. But, yeah, last meals is like, we're putting everything into that. We want to make a perfect meal for someone. Like, that's the whole point of the show. And I feel like every dish that we make, we're like, you know, putting our heart and soul and love into, which is really awesome.
A huge moment for me was with Benny Blanco, who like that dude is super, super into food, wrote a cookbook. He's been to the mountaintop of like eating all the best foods in the world. And we did an episode of Fancy Fast Food, Olive Garden spaghetti and meatballs. And we made this insane, like, was it saffron infused, hand rolled peachy pasta, this like very obscure handmade pasta from the south of Italy. And then we made this like harissa wagyu meatballs spiked with lamb. And we ate that and he was like, this is one of the best things I've ever eaten. And so it has been really cool. In the beginning, we had to try and conform to what Good Mythical Morning did in terms of just like, wacky, we made a 4-foot bowl of tater tot, you know, like a bowl out of tater tots and filled with chili. Remember that? What a nightmare that was. But then gradually, like, we've seen people's taste shift. We've seen our own sort of brand shift. And now we really do just get to kind of cook some of the coolest things we've ever done.
Yeah, we cook food good. You think we don't, but we do. We actually do. Like, if you watch the shows, there's good food in there, I promise. You just gotta find it.
They're looked down upon by traditional chefs because they're YouTuber chefs.
By whom?
Name them.
Who's assuming this?
Yeah, we have a list. We'll go over that.
We are a little bit of redheaded stepchildren of the food media world a little bit. I think a lot of the times people think of us as these like jokesters that are just silly people that just have stuff in the fridge and someone says to do something and we create it. But I think we really are quite dedicated to what we do and we care about the food that we make. We're not necessarily feeding people at a restaurant. We're not turning tables. Mm. We're feeding the content machine, and maybe a celebrity. So I think people need to also be aware of that as they go into our videos too.
Yeah, I think that's less of an us thing and more of a YouTube thing in general. Mm. I think in general, content creators in their fields are just looked down upon by people in traditional media or jobs that are like, oh, you do it for YouTube. Like, that's not real. Like, that's not a real job. Mm. Like, you didn't go to the same school that I went to. You didn't, you know, have all the same things that I had. And so I think that there are some people that, yeah, probably are like not good chefs on YouTube. But I think that a lot of like people have a lot of skills and talents that do just go underappreciated because it's like, oh, you're a content creator. You're not a real X or whatever.
Mm. I think Food Network chefs dealt with this in the 90s and 2000s too, right? We're following that same path. These traditional media people, whatever that means, because everything is just an app on a smart TV now, right? Eventually, those traditional media people are going to need the digital people more than we need them. And we're seeing that shift happen right now. We were just at an event up in Napa with a bunch of like—
Oh yeah, Cookbook Fest.
Martin Yan, baby. Martin Yan, Tyler Florence, like a lot of traditional food media people. And none of them look down on us. As a YouTuber, you can command the space and you can do it with the same amount of professionalism as anybody from traditional media. You're gonna own that space in the moment, mm-hmm. right? And nobody can look down on you for that.
Our next assumption has to do with the kitchen itself. They definitely always use proper safety precautions on the show.
You ever been to a restaurant? You know what they're doing to your food back there? We've all worked in restaurants.
Pooping on it.
You guys remember? I mean, the last like full-time kitchen job I had, we literally had a code for when the health inspector showed up.
Red October. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just said code red. We rang a bell. We took all of our violations, put it in a closet, had somebody stand guard.
Yeah.
That's every restaurant in the world.
And what were those violations?
Things have to be 9 inches off the ground, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you don't have enough racks, so you just put stuff on the ground, right? Yeah. There were certain things have to be in, they call out of the temperature danger zone. But the irony is, if a sauce is cooling, that's going to be in the temperature danger zone for a certain amount of time. So if a health inspector shows up, there's just all of these legalistic things. No restaurant in the world is following every single safety precaution. And that is a fact. You know, I think we are on par with restaurants.
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? When I worked in an Italian restaurant, the owner, you know, he's on expo and he'd just be like scratching his tummy. He would literally just be like scratching his tummy. And I'm like, that's a hairy Italian belly.
Your tummy itches, but you gotta fire the chicken Vesuvio. What are you gonna do? Not itch your tummy? You're gonna itch your tummy.
You know, I'd say we're like in the 92% range right now. Right now, 92%. A little bit gross.
Dude, an A- is great.
Yeah, you know, if it's good enough for my house, if it's good enough for Benny Blanco or whoever else we're serving, you know?
I get the sense that, you know, if you are in the same kitchen and you are, we'll say, throwing the violations in the freezer together, there's got to be some sort of camaraderie. Our next assumption is that people at Mythical are usually goofing off behind the scenes.
Very serious work environment. Very serious. Zero shenanigans.
Well, I'm curious about your experience now, like having worked a lot with Smosh and also like other people. Like, rank the seriousness of like, you know, React, Smosh, people that you've worked with a fair amount in the last year?
It's tough to say because obviously, like when I was at Mythical, I had a full-time job, you know, like I was sitting and working and doing like normal stuff. From a purely like person standpoint, the person that I see as like the most professional and like not goofing off, it's gotta be like Ian or Rhett. Like those two more than anyone, I think just come across as serious. But I mean, Smosh is like, everyone's very goofy. There is also like a lot of time though, like if your perception of Smosh is that when we're there, like when we're filming, we're high energy. And when we get off of filming, we're still like goofing around. A lot of the times we're just like sitting on a couch waiting, like on our phones or sleeping. Like the amount of times that I walk in and see Chance just knocked out on the couch. But yeah, I mean, I think that for YouTube studios, like, I feel like they're professional, you know, like we have jobs, we get work done. Like at the end of the day, we are making something, we're producing content, and that requires a level of focus. But, you know, everyone's very lighthearted and fun to be around. And because of the nature of what we do, we work with a lot of just fun and funny people in general.
So. I don't know if goofy is the right term. I think it's young at heart. At least at Mythical.
A childlike sense of wonder.
I don't know what it is. I think there's a lot of people that work at Mythical that are very young at heart and are just, they're here to get a job done, but they're also surrounded by so many like-minded individuals that there's no chance you can't get a little silly and goofy with each other. I think there's a level of seriousness whenever it like comes to hunker down. Like if you gotta finish at 5 o'clock, we're gonna go from tooth and nail to make sure everyone's done at five. Like whenever it comes down to it, we are very serious, but when the cameras are on, like you have to be funny, you have to be relatable, you have to be silly. And a lot of the times we're not on camera by ourselves, like we're working alongside one another. So it makes it really, really easy.
Yeah, I wanna point out, I think something that you guys all have said, right, is that there is a job to get done, right? And that usually implies professionalism. But Nicole, something that you had mentioned earlier was that people were submitting memes as resumes. Where do you kind of see that comparison being drawn in that factor?
I think people think Mythical is like a very, like you said, fun, silly, goofy place. And you're supposed to, you know, put your silliest foot forward. And what was it? Someone sent a picture of an Autobot? I don't know.
It was Bumblebee. He's a Transformer.
He's a Transformer,
Bumblebee? Do we know the gender of Bumblebee?
I don't know if Autobots, I mean, they come across as gendered. And I would say the Bumblebee is a male. But I don't know. You know, in the lore, what...
They submitted a picture of Bumblebee, the Autobot.
No, let's go back.
And not even at the bottom of your resume as like a little cheeky wink. Like, don't do that ever at any job.
Yeah, you got to think about the people that are going to be like reading your resume. I'm not reading any resumes, you know? A picture of Bumblebee would fly with me. Yeah. That's hilarious.
That's sick. The phrase that goes through my head, and I'm sure I've said out loud at some points, is just... this ain't a fucking summer camp. You know what I mean? This ain't a fucking summer camp. This is like a real job and we're all really driven to make this succeed. And the thing that drives me is I've been in like food media my entire career since college when I started a blog. I've seen way too many places shut down, go through layoffs because they simply weren't financially viable, right? And so I'm like, we need to make this successful first so we can continue having fun. It's like that basketball coach when you were a kid, Nicole, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
That was like, the goal is to have fun. But winning is fun. You know, that's like the whole kind of idea. It's like, you need to make this successful first so we can then goof off.
I'm curious to know where you guys kind of draw the line at job here. Because there is an assumption that you're not all actually chefs, that you're instead just reading off scripts and other people are cooking the real food off the camera.
So actually, Rhett and Link are cooking all the food.
I don't cook anymore at work whatsoever. It is all on the culinary production team, which Trevor was a part of. But like Nicole, V, Lily, and we have a really talented PA named Colby. But at some point, I was the only person cooking food at Mythical. But that's how you sort of scale up any sort of endeavor, right? Same thing happened with all the Food Network chefs. Same thing happened for any chef in a restaurant, right? The goal of any chef who owns a restaurant is to get so successful that they're never there cooking. I'd like to think that you and I, especially, because we were the first two that sort of like founded Mythical Kitchen, has sort of like passed down that ethos and the learning of how things should be on camera to where other people are now executing your ideas.
Yeah, there's a lot of unlearning that goes into it, especially because we have hired from restaurant backgrounds for the most part. So I think there's a little bit of unlearning that goes into, you're not feeding, I kind of have to like drill it into people's heads when they first get into the kitchen. You're not feeding people, you're feeding the camera first and then another person.
Yeah, we don't make food, we make images of food.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of a lot of patience that goes into it. But yeah, you don't cook anymore. I barely cook. I just kind of like make sure everything is good. Like they call it like Lily and Colby, they like call us in, taste things, make sure everything is good. They come make sure that everything is the way that we want it to be, make sure the caliber's met. So, I mean, I miss cooking sometimes.
Yes,
I miss getting my hands dirty the way that I used to. But at the same time, it's the only way we can grow and expand.
It's interesting. There's almost a parallel here, again, across industries where, you know, usually you start off kind of building skills and kind of training until you eventually can reach a position of being like a CEO, a consultant, where you're not actually doing a lot of the original tasks that you were skilled at the beginning. Now, are you all so sick of cooking that you have to do takeout at home?
When I get home, I love cooking for my husband and I. I think I do it about anywhere from 4 to 6 times a week. Again, the dishes are very complex. I'm not making a beef Wellington for my husband. I'm not crazy.
Coward.
I go home, I make a 30-minute meal. I put love and energy into it for about 30 minutes. And it makes me, I know this is very silly and very outdated, but it makes me feel like I'm doing like a wifely duty in a way. It makes me feel responsible for feeding my family. And the food is so different whenever I'm making food for GMM and Mythical Kitchen versus the food I'm making for my husband and I. It's so different.
I think it's a love language.
It really is. It really is. It's like I'm nourishing my family. Yes.
Yeah.
Check the box. Like it makes me feel good.
Yeah. I will say since I stopped working as a full-time producer, I started cooking at home a lot more. But I think it's less so. I mean, it was hard for me to cook, but it also kind of the timing coincided a little bit with when I moved in with Raven. And I found that I love cooking for Raven. Like, I think most of like why I cook more now is because I want to take care of her and like I can't take care of myself. But like when I'm doing it for her, it's like I love coming home. And it's nothing like complicated. Like every once in a while I'll go more like all out. But for the most part, it's like I'm just like roasting veggies and making rice and like cooking fish or chicken or whatever. But it's like awesome. Like I love doing it for her. So I don't know, had I been like living on my own and stopped working, I likely wouldn't have started cooking more, let's be honest with myself. But I do, I enjoy cooking at home, but I enjoy kind of like the simplicity of it, I guess.
Cooking's one of the only things in the world that I truly, truly love to do. You know, I love blasting new metal, I love lifting weights, and I love cooking. I could like satisfy, I could live an entire full life just by doing those things. Now that I don't cook as much at work, I've had to like force myself to take on big, stupid, multi-day cooking projects at home because it's what I love to do. And it's like what I love to put emotional energy into, you know, and also I won't even take a picture of it because I wanted to just like live for myself, like creativity for creativity's sake. Because so much of us being on YouTube, it's like living for the camera and not living for yourself. And also cooking for Julia, you know, it's like the way that I show love. And it's such a beautiful, you know, gesture of care and service. And so every single night I'll cook dinner for her. I'll cook a separate portion for lunch for her because I know she won't feed herself.
So what I'm hearing is girl dinner is out.
Well, if I'm left by myself, I'll eat boy dinner, which is a whole wide mouth jar of salsa verde and rotisserie chicken. And I claw the chicken and I shove it in there.
That's girl dinner.
Is that still girl dinner?
That is, yeah.
It's still girl dinner. Yeah. So I'm a big girl dinner guy. And then I go and suck the sauce out of the chicken.
I'm curious, Josh, hearing you say, you know, that you didn't even take a picture of it. Do you guys get upset when you see that at restaurants, right? Because it's like specifically when you are called to set to your job to be making the content. Obviously, you're going to, presentation matters and you're going to show that off. But when you see it just like out in the wild, is it frustrating at all?
No,
or
I get it.
Camera eats first? Phone eats first?
Phone eats first. Do you. It doesn't piss me off. I mean, do what you got to do. You know, get the likes, get the clicks, do what makes you feel good.
Fills me with unbridled rage. Yeah.
I don't really care. Yeah. I mean,
well,
I get it.
Okay, it's like at a concert,
Chase
right?
Chase the dragon or whatever.
It's like
say.
At a concert when there is a really awesome moment going down, and instead of actually seeing the awesome moment, all you see are the reflections from thousands of screens. I kind of hate it. I kind of hate that. And I kind of hate being at a restaurant, and my favorite restaurants are the ones where you like fully lose yourself in the moment of that restaurant, right? And then you just see people with their little light box, you know, some people are wrapping the napkin around it to diffuse the light. I do miss the, you know, time when we just got to live in the moment and enjoy each other's company.
The concerts, oh my God. Seeing videos of concerts, it's literally just everybody holding their phone. That makes me sick. I've never been a food picture taker.
my God, this is just turning into me simping for Raven. I take pictures of Raven now. Anytime we're out at like a nice special dinner, it's like, Trevor loves his girlfriend. What a freak.
What a loser.
I'll wait until the food comes out. And then I'm like, okay, I want to take a picture of her. And the table will be in it. I'm not like taking pictures of the food. I'm just taking a picture across the table. Mm. But that's like the extent. And I'm not going back and like looking at the food or anything. But that's like the pictures that I'm taking in a restaurant.
You're going back and looking at Raven.
Yeah. Yeah,
a lot.
Love it.
They all wanted their own network TV show and settled for YouTube.
So, fun fact, before I started working at Mythical, I had a Food Network job that literally coincided with, I double booked myself pretty much. The first week I was going to be at Mythical, but on the Wednesday, I booked myself for a Food Network shoot that was about 2.5 weeks. So they would overlap. And I was freaking out because I already made this commitment to you guys. And then I made a commitment to Food Network. And I told myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know what to do. Which way should I? Literally was at a fork in the road. And I was consulting my former culinary school teacher that I'm very close with. And I said, listen, this is where I'm at right now. What do you think I should do? And he said, listen, do you want to be a big part of something small? Or do you want to be a small part of something big? And then I thought to myself, and I'm like, I really think I want to be a big part of something small. But of course, stupid old me, I didn't know how big Mythical was. So I was like, of course I'm going to go with Mythical. And then I did it. And I think it was truly the best decision I made because I feel like I've honed my skills as a professional culinary person. But that's not to say that I wouldn't love to do it in the future.
When you made that decision, I love the idea, right? It's like big fish, small pond kind of thing. Did you feel like you were settling?
No, because I watched GMM every single morning for like 3 months.
Yeah.
So I understood what I was getting into. I just know the sheer volume of the team. I was like, I can do this. I was like, I know that I can do this and I can do it well and I'm gonna do it no matter what.
I think there's a huge power in killing your idols. Mm-hmm. I read Matthew Perry's autobiography because I read books.
Yep.
But he said something really powerful where he was like, I had accomplished all of the dreams that I had when I was a kid. I just didn't realize they were the wrong dreams, right? You have these idols that you hold up in your mind, like getting a Food Network show is the pinnacle, right? But like, I never wanted to be on camera. I thought I was gonna be a writer my whole life. And by the time I was like 24, I had a book deal with a major publisher. I was a senior writer at a James Beard award-winning magazine. I was freelancing for Maxim and GQ. I had my dream job at such a young age. I was just also making like $42,000 a year and I was sad all the time and I hated my life. And I was very confused because I was like, I did it. I did the dream.
Right.
And I realized like the magazine industry was absolutely crumbling. Everybody there hated their lives. They put that onto other people. It was hard work. Didn't even like writing. It turns out I was just good at it. And so I just sort of like killed that ideal. I never wanted to work in YouTube. I didn't grow up watching YouTube. This stuff is all very foreign to me. And it's very strange to now be, you know, thrust into this culture of strange YouTube drama. Like, these are people that I've never heard of. And somehow we're here interviewing Tom Hanks, you know, eating pancakes on the same platform. I'm very committed to YouTube now. I'm very committed to Mythical Kitchen and the stuff that we're building. And I'm really curious to see 5 years from now if this question is going to look very silly.
Yeah.
Because as it shakes out, I think YouTube is going to be the top dog, and I think all the numbers would predict that.
If something were to happen to Mythical, they'd all be working in a restaurant.
That's a great question. Because that is, I think, the fork that a lot of us are really considering is if anything does crumble, you know, if they find out about Link.
Bowie's Creek Elementary.
We all know.
I think if I worked in a restaurant, I would die. I don't know. I've been on the line before. I've been on Expo. I've been a hostess. I don't like restaurant life. It's not for me. The pacing is terrible for me. It's aggressive. It's hot. It's sweaty. I can't do restaurants. I can't. I love restaurants and I appreciate them and I think they're wonderful. But as long as I'm not involved in anything, that's great. Yeah, I think I'd probably find something in entertainment. Probably. I have no idea what it would be, though. It would have
to be. The bear.
You could be the bear from the show The Bear.
Yay!
Yeah.
Cool.
You know the bear that comes out every 3 episodes?
Yeah. We can get you on there. Don't worry.
I think it would have to be entertainment because I don't know what else I would do. Maybe like, I don't know, I'll sell tummy tea on Instagram. I don't know what else I would do. I haven't thought that far. But I don't think I could survive restaurant life.
I'm rooted in entertainment. It's what I've been doing for a majority of my career at this point. Definitely have some backup plans, you know, that have been floating around in my head. I would definitely write another book. But yeah, no, I'm stuck here with you. Sorry.
It is tough. Like, that's one thing that honestly I've been feeling a lot, like, very recently, like this year, is if it did for whatever reason fall apart, like, I have so much anxiety that I wouldn't be good enough to continue doing, because I love this. Mm. I love what I'm doing now. I'm really enjoying it. And I'm very happy. And with that comes this looming dread of, if it did go away, I don't think I'd be good enough to keep, like, continue to, like, be successful.
As, like a solo creator, or?
As, like, a solo creator, as being in the industry in general, as finding another thing, as becoming the, you know, new try guy, like, whatever it is, like, I don't think that, like, I have this anxiety that, like, if it did fall apart, there would be no continuing on, and I would have to figure out something else to do. And I would either have to, like, go back to working in a restaurant or shoot off in whatever new path of my life, I don't know, become a professional golfer or something, which wouldn't work out because I suck at golf.
Yeah, so. But that's the only problem.
That's already a non-starter.
If you didn't suck at golf, you would be a great professional golfer.
Yeah, true, true,
Looks
true.
Looks so good in those little polos.
That's true, man. Shoot, maybe I should start golfing again.
Or you become a model for golf magazines.
Trevor's tall.
Yeah.
No, yeah, so it's tough. It's like there's things that I would very much want to do. But yeah, I just don't know if I would be good enough, and that sits with me every single day when I go to sleep.
You have to be okay with it going away, and that's fine, right?
That's with any job, though.
This is different, though. We literally make money based on, like, the click.
Yeah, but you right? can get fired we're existing, from any job.
But we're existing in, like, a very weirdly high-stakes, hyper-analytical, hyper-capitalist dystopian media landscape.
That's fair.
Right, where we get an analytics report every single video that we publish that, like, this is ranked number 1 out of 10. This is 3% behind the average view duration of the previous video. And, like, we are getting flooded with data. We're getting flooded with information. There's more and more competition every day. And now we're just, like, flooded with this constant threat that we could go away because we have all this knowledge.
Imagine being an accountant, and as long as you could do math, you have a job.
Sounds great.
Pretty solid.
What's 7 times 6? Does anybody know off the top of their heads?
What's 42. Give me the job. Give me the job.
Going back a little bit to the beginnings of it, especially how all of you started, there's an assumption that everyone who works at Mythical started as an intern and then just kind of worked their way up. Is that true?
No, not at all. Also, it's funny that everyone thinks that Mythical is like this little mom and pop shop with, like, the interns start and they're not getting paid. It's like there's a report on Forbes every year of top creators. It's a multi-million-dollar enterprise. It's really big. But I had, like, a fully established food media career before I started. I mean, I started a blog in college. It won Sever Magazine's Food Blog Award for Best Writing. I got a book deal with a major publisher. I think I signed the contract when I was 23, published when I was 25. I was a senior food writer at Los Angeles Magazine, which is a James Beard Award-winning magazine. I was freelancing for LA Weekly. I had a weekly column in Maxim magazine about food, which was rad. And then I was just ready for a change. I published my cookbook. I was kind of sick of writing. And I sent a cookbook to Rhett and Link, hoping that they'd, like, tweet about it, because I worked with them on one video randomly. And then instead they offered me a job. And I kind of saw this potential white space for what is Mythical Kitchen now, where I knew they were expanding a lot because they were doing the 4 videos at the time. And I was like, if food is so big for them, they're leaving so much meat on the bone by not showing anybody cook that food. I've kind of had a really big wealth of experiences, all of which led to Mythical Kitchen being successful, right? Without all of those experiences, I never would have understood how to navigate a corporate hierarchy, right? I never would have understand how to deal with failure. I never would have understand how to analyze data. But I did have that. And if you did just start as an intern, you know, you probably wouldn't have had that ability or the savoir-faire to, like, understand how to do all those things.
Me? I mean, I guess so. I started when I was very young. I was 20 when I got hired. But I mean, I graduated from culinary school and I worked for a year as a pastry chef at one of the most famous bakeries in the world. And, you know, previous to that, I had 19 years of experience being funny. So, True. You know, I was pretty well qualified. For Mythical Kitchen, it's like you can't really have a lot of job experience that's specific for that job before that. It's like you just got to, you know how to cook and be creative. And I think that everyone that, you know, works in Mythical Kitchen currently is that, you know, we all came from a background of knowing how to cook and we're all very creative and artistic and funny people. If anyone had the like most questionable amount of experience to start, it was probably me. And I still feel that I was, you know, qualified for the job.
You had your own Twitch channel and you worked for the best, like the most famous pastry chef in the world.
Yeah.
And like, if you're successful in one arena, I think you can be successful in another. Honestly, without the name Dominique Ansel on your resume, I don't think we would have hired you.
Well,
but,
you know.
But that, like, the fact that you yeah. did work there shows something about yourself, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason that we're hiring people who are high achievers because we want to achieve things.
Yeah. To be fair, I didn't start as an intern. I did start as an assistant. So I
you're
think
an associate producer.
My first title there at Mythical was kitchen assistant.
BS.
No.
BS.
Dude, no.
Pull up your media review right now, bro.
I swear. I swear.
Pull it up.
There's a tweet that says you said Nicole is my assistant.
No, it's I didn't.
Yes, it is.
Whoa.
I'll find it. We can find it.
Breaking news.
Not having this
no,
fight.
No, but it's fine. Like, it was just, I started as an assistant and then slowly became associate producer and then slowly became producer and then slowly became senior culinary producer. So I didn't start as an intern, but I did start like from the bottom.
But what did you do before that?
Before that, I did almost every job in the kitchen. I started my culinary career when I was 19. I worked at a chocolate store. I was a sales associate, and then I became a research and development chef. And then from becoming a research and development chef, I worked as a research and development chef for a CPG company. And then from there, I worked as a food stylist for another CPG company. And then I worked in restaurants here and there. I did a lot of odd random jobs in the food sphere. And then one day I was watching the show and I was like, bro, I can do this. I can do this better than Josh probably. So I've probably talked about this before on like other platforms, but I DM'd Josh and I said, hey, do you need any other people in the kitchen? LOL.
No, you said, when are you going to hire me?
No.
And I said, I'm high on Percocet.
Yeah, that's right. You were
I just got an inguinal hernia surgery.
Yeah, he was doing an AMA. He's like, high on Percocets. Any questions? And I just said, give me a job. And then I kept saying like, hey, give me a job. Here's my resume. Here's my Instagram. Here's my whatever, whatever, whatever. And then after like a few months of radio silence, I hit him up again. And then again. And then finally he's like, hey, come on in. So I started from like kitchen assistant and then slowly became senior culinary producer. And it's been great so far.
But also you were a commercial food stylist before.
Yeah, I did a lot of odd jobs. And I think doing all of those odd, weird culinary jobs is what set me up to be able to work at Mythical.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Mythical with you guys.
It's hard to have a unique presence on camera when Good Mythical Morning already is an established brand.
One of the things that makes me feel the best is when I'll get confronted by a fan in public and they're like, I had never heard of Good Mythical Morning. I only heard about it from Mythical Kitchen, which happens. That happens over time. Very similar thing with Smosh, right? Where there's now a generation of Smosh fans who like don't really know who, you know, Ian and Anthony are, or at least that wasn't the thing that got them into it. And so it all just takes time. Like we started out making Dorito crusted lamb's brains. And then 3 years later, I'm interviewing Tom Hanks about his grandfather's murder trial that his own father had to testify in and how generational trauma trickles down into art. That's a pretty insane brand flip, right? Or not a flip, but you divert the river slowly into doing the things that you want to be known for and trust in the audience to come with you. And we've really done that. And I think all need to give ourselves a lot of credit for that in Mythical Kitchen.
It's weird because people talk about, you know, having your own personal brand. And I think that's kind of a choice that you have to make and that anyone at Mythical, you know, has made. Because I think that we're all talented enough, like, should we want to go and pursue, like, make our own YouTube videos, do anything like that, like, have our own presence. Like, I mean, even thinking like people like Chase, could easily do his own stuff on the side and have like his own personal like content or brand things. But I think that that's maybe is just not for everyone or not what everyone wants to do. Like everyone is talented and capable enough. It's just whether or not you want to put in that effort to, make that something that you want to do.
We do all have the ability and the strength to do so. I just really respect your vision, Josh. I don't know what it is. I just, when I would watch you on camera, I was like, this guy's great. I want to work with someone like this because they know what they're doing. And I kind of don't know what I'm doing. I'm kind of just doing all these random odd jobs. And my parents are asking me what I'm going to do with my life. And they're mad that I'm washing pots every day. And they don't understand what I'm doing. They don't know why I went to cooking school. They're angry. So I was like, this guy seems like he knows what he's doing. Let me just...
And 4 years later, what do you think now?
I do. I think you have a great vision. And I think you say this all the time. You say rising tides lift all boats. And yep. I know that you believe that within your core. So, I mean, of course, I could, say, fuck you, see you, never, and go do my own thing. Mm. But I respect and I like your vision enough to tag along for the ride as long as you'll have me.
I think today, especially, there's so much pressure to have that personal brand because there's so many platforms. It's almost, it seems like it's easy and convenient to just put your phone up and record yourself, but it's a lot more challenging. But personal branding does, it transitions really well into where we're headed next, which is individual assumptions. And Josh, I think I love all the love that Nicole was just giving you as well. Definitely congratulations on all of the accomplishments that you've listed. I think you have definitely seen a lot of early success. But there's an assumption that, given all that you've already done, that you dumb yourself down on camera to be more relatable to this wider audience. What do you have to say?
No, he's that stupid.
Eat rocks for breakfast.
All right, moving on.
My question is, which camera am I dumbing myself down for? Because we have a podcast, right? Where we literally talk to a Cartesian metaphysicist about whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich.
Good times.
And that was like, it's a dumb prompt, right? It's something that's sort of salacious, but it's a really incredibly intelligent conversation that we had with like a legitimate philosopher who he thought it was incredibly intelligent. He really liked it, right? And he understands the value of pop philosophy. And so there's certain times when I'm acting stupid and there's certain times where I think I'm being smart, but it all depends on what somebody is currently watching at the time. I don't dumb myself down intentionally. People are just multifaceted. And also we have thousands of hours of content and I don't know which ones you've watched.
And the answer is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Of course.
And speaking of sandwiches, Nicole, the assumption is that you are the true glue that keeps the Mythical Kitchen team together and moving forward. Like a sandwich.
I'd say more scotch tape more than glue. That's a great question. I actually don't know.
The glue is Annalise Kassebaum.
Right. Annalise Kassebaum, who is she's the head producer? What's her name?
Co-executive producer.
She's the co-executive producer of Mythical Kitchen, and she is the one that keeps it all together. I might appear that way on camera. I guess I have kind of like a motherly, maternal, female like vibe that makes people think that I keep it all together. But no, I think Annalise does that pretty damn well. She does a lot better than I does. A lot better than I do. A lot better.
Trevor wishes the Mythical fan base was a bit younger because it feels like the Smosh fans get his sense of humor more.
I think that there are parts of me sometimes when I'm like, I wish, people found that funny because I think it's funny. And I do think that the Smosh audience gets my humor a little bit more, but I don't necessarily think that Mythical having an older audience is bad because I think it leads to a different type of funny dynamic, which is nobody really getting what I'm doing. And it's like, that is funny because like I say things on camera and Josh is like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't get the reference. I don't know who that is. And then that leads to being funny because even though you didn't get the joke, it's like, it's funny because you don't get the joke. And then there's people who are like, I didn't get that either. I relate to Josh. Like, what is he doing? What's wrong with him?
Yeah.
And then there are those, like some of those younger fans that are like, that was hilarious. I love when Josh was completely confused and why doesn't he know, what Valorant is?
I still don't.
Well, listen, despite your age differences and interests, you obviously all have a relationship to each other. I'm curious to know what assumptions you had about each other before you started working together.
I thought Trevor would be unprofessional because he was 19. And then Trevor, do you remember the mug that you brought your first day of work?
Yeah, I was unprofessional.
What was your mug?
Can you tell people what the mug said?
The one, I thought it was pretty tasteful. It said, senpai in the streets, hentai in the sheets.
And what did I tell you, Trevor?
You told me that was sick as fuck.
That's not true, Trevor. That's not true. Tell him what I told you.
That I needed to take it home.
And never bring it back to work again.
And never bring it back to work.
Was this on your first day?
To be fair, no, that wasn't my first day. This happened months. It took you months to notice.
No,
wait,
really? No, that was really early on.
Swear to God.
Because then I had to make a judgment call on your hat.
What was my hat? Oh, Bigfoot eating ass. See, this is why I wish that the audience was younger, but that Josh was younger.
Yeah.
Because then he'd think that shit was hilarious.
Well, I think it's hilarious. Bigfoot is real and he tried to eat my ass is what your hat says. And I was like, for some reason, I made the judgment call that that hat was okay to wear at work. But it wasn't the words on the mug, but there was, I believe, a somewhat graphic depiction of a hentai.
No, there was not. It was only
just
words.
Just
I would never bring a hentai mug that had actual hentai on it.
Okay, okay.
Office.
What is hentai?
I'm not an idiot.
Trevor.
I don't want to explain it, man.
I'll Google it later. I thought you would be really hard on me. I thought you would come in and you would give me a lot of crappy things to do just to exert your dominance.
And I didn't do that.
You didn't do that. You were so nice, like the first 2 weeks.
You were nice.
So nice. And then you got a little bit more serious after that.
Well, things got more serious.
Yes, they did. But that's it. I don't have any assumptions about you, Trevor. I thought you were great.
Oh, thank you.
I really did.
Yeah, no, I think I probably would have assumed that it would be less insane than it was. I think that there were definitely times, especially when it was just the three of us in those early days, where I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah, well, your first day, you were filling out the HR paperwork on the upstairs balcony, mm-hmm. which is where we stationed the top of a beer bong
mm-hmm.
filled with 5 pounds of baby food.
That was my first day.
Yeah, so I really was set up to, you know, not have any reservations, I guess, going in. It was, you know.
So I was covered in baby food.
You were.
But also I broke the world record that day.
Right.
I had the
did.
Guinness plaque.
And then you were pooping a lot.
That adds up because of the 5 pounds. Well, probably about 9 pounds of baby food throughout the whole day.
Yeah, you had a lot of it in you.
Maybe I do dumb myself down for camera.
For our final set.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Segment. We have a little presentation here of regional American foods. We'd like you to see each of these images and agree upon a ranking from S to F, S being the most edible, F being the least.
Okay.
Josh is going to know every season. He's going to be like, okay. Oh, I've had this before.
We'll see.
Okay,
we'll see.
I've never had this before, but I'm going to give it a C.
C?
C for me.
Pennsylvania Dutch chicken and waffles.
I grew up eating this. I literally grew up eating this. My family's Pennsylvania Dutch. This, to me, is the best form of chicken waffles. This is S tier.
That sounds awesome.
It's awesome. What's bad about this?
It's too creamy.
Yeah, it's a gravy on a waffle. That's
I don't like the creamy. Too creamy.
I'm with you. It's giving soupy.
Yeah.
We'll give it B.
I said C.
I said S.
Oh, we're supposed to agree on one?
Yeah.
Okay, B.
B, we'll put it in the B tier.
Okay.
Liver mush, Western North Carolina, a meat product made from pig liver, pig head, and cornmeal. By law in North Carolina, liver mush must be at least 30% pork liver. This is like really similar to Scrapple.
Mm-hmm. I love Scrapple.
Or like a slug burger that they make down there. With the cornmeal. This is great. Cornmeal crisps up. Liver is delightful. If you didn't call that liver mush, you'd call it pate. That's S tier.
Okay, so what do we agree on?
I don't know. I like pate. I'll go A.
Let's go A.
That feels crazy that's above the chicken and waffles, but whatever.
Okay. A slopper, my nickname in high school, from Pueblo, Colorado Springs, Connecticut. Oh, Colorado. A cheeseburger smothered in chili sauce and eaten with a knife and fork. A. or S.
I want my chili inside my burger if I'm going chili on a burger. I hate eating a burger with a knife and fork. Can we grow up?
But when people are putting in cheese.
It's too messy, though. You can't do it with your hands.
When people are like, let's just douse a burger in cheese. This is a C.
I'll put this in B. I think this is also S tier.
Okay, we can go B.
Scrambled dog from Columbus, Georgia. A thin hot dog smothered in chili and topped with oyster crackers, pickles, and coleslaw. A specialty of Dinglewood Pharmacy. For the name alone, A.
Dinglewood
Pharmacy. I've never heard of this.
For the name alone, S tier. Dinglewood Pharmacy.
Dinglewood Pharmacy is cooking here. Yeah, I'm going A or S.
Really? Scrambled dog. I don't know, man.
I'd be willing to put it in C.
This is sold at a pharmacy, a real pharmacy. Where is the hot dog? Like, I can't even find it.
Where is the hot dog? Well, but also pharmacies, right? Pharmacies are where, like, Coca-Cola was invented, right?
Like,
pharmacies, soda jerks. So, like, a lot of that actually makes sense. And they're serving a lot of old school foods.
Fine,
yeah, this is like a C to me, though.
Fine, we'll give it a C. Fine.
There's so many good regional hot dogs. I don't think
that's
up there with them.
Fine, we'll give it a C. Fried brain sandwich from Evansville, Indiana. Sliced calves brains fried. I love brain sandwiches. But I love Persian brain sandwiches, so I'm going to give this a B because I don't know exactly what else is in it.
Dude, yeah, I mean, I freak with brains too, but it looks like it's just brains on there.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't look like there's much else going on.
The problem about this fried brain sandwich is that it's underdressed because the best thing about, like, a Persian brain sandwich is you get the pickles, right? You get, you know, all the crunchy bed, stuff like that. Yeah, this is, I think, this is, what's the lower tier than C?
D.
All right, let's go D.
Okay. We'll go with D. The chow mein sandwich.
Hell yes.
S
tier.
Dude, look at it. Oh, yeah, that's
that
S.
Looks chow mein so sandwich. Good.
This also exists in Guatemala. Torta de chow mein.
Wait, that looks so good.
Yeah, dude, put noodles in your bread, whatever. Starving. Put a tamale in your torta. Do what you want. That's great.
Starving. Southern tomato pie from Alabama. Ingredients: pie shell, filling of tomatoes, covered with a topping of grated cheese, mixed with either mayonnaise or a white sauce. I might just give this an S, baby.
Yeah.
Do
that,
it.
That looks like an S.
Do it. S tier.
I mean, that's just, you know, alternative pizza, really, if we're talking about it.
Yeah.
It's pizza beautiful. With mayo.
It's good. Come on, Raja.
No, I freak with it.
I'm just pointing it out. This is a picky eater's nightmare going through
this. How do you feel?
So, like, grated cheese mixed with mayonnaise is basically southern pimento cheese at that point. No, this is an incredible dish. It's basically a quiche at that point. That's great. That rips. S tier.
S.
Frog eye salad from Idaho, Utah? Idaho and Utah? Whatever. Oh. A sweet pasta salad made with anchi de pepe pasta, whipped topping, and egg yolks? F?
See, I'm kind of with this one.
F?
I grew up eating a lot of what I can only call white trash delight, and it's always some sort of, like, canned fruit and pasta mixed with Cool Whip and mayonnaise and stuff.
Cool, do it.
I'd put this in, like, a C. It's probably pleasant, right? You're at a picnic, you're eating a bunch of pasta with, that looks like, what is that, canned mandarin orange in there?
Yeah, I'd give it, like, a solid C.
I'd go to C.
Okay, yeah. C it is. Ice cream potato from Idaho. Cocoa powder gives the vanilla ice cream the appearance of a potato skin. S, baby.
This is just
awesome.
Ice cream. This is just ice cream with cocoa powder. That's an S. Let's go, Idaho.
This is S. That's fun. Paying homage to the local agriculture. That's awesome, man. Hey, good job, man.
Hey, thanks. I invented it.
The cannibal sandwich from Wisconsin. Raw beef with onions on rye. Every year, the health department begs people not to eat these. It's an S from me. I love raw meat.
No, it's great. I think as long as you're taking the proper safety precautions with your beef, then that's an easy S for me.
Yeah, they also call this a tiger meat sandwich. It's really fantastic. It comes from, like, the German like tartar tradition. Right. This is an awesome sandwich.
Chili and cinnamon rolls from Midwest.
Oh God, no! I want to throw up. I love cinnamon rolls too much, and that's awful. I'm giving.
I think it's
an F.
A perversion of cinnamon rolls. I agree with you. F.
Most disgusting thing I've ever heard of. F. Kansas, you should be ashamed.
Coolicles, dill pickles soaked in a Kool-Aid solution from the Mississippi Delta. I've had this before. I've made this before. And honestly, pretty damn delicious. I'd give it an A.
Really? I don't know. It's just like there's bittersweet pickles to me. It just feels like you're doing too
much. But are any of the sweet pickles as violently red?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that doesn't really do it for me.
I made red, white, and blue Kulikul onions for my 4th of July
burgers. God bless America.
Jesus Christ.
I'll give it an A.
Okay, we can go A. It tastes good. It's just like, why?
Water burgers.
What?
Ground beef patties boiled in water and sometimes beef broth.
I think In-N-Out's better.
Who's doing that?
I'm going to give this a D just based
a
on
D.
the photo.
I'm
alone.
Giving that an F.
Yeah.
It's just boiled burger.
I'll give it an F. I can see a world in which it's good, but No, that's F.
F.
I hope you guys enjoyed that segment. You really shocked me, honestly, with a lot of your answers. I would be over here gagging and you'd be like, S, S.
Foods only exist because people find them good. Like, they wouldn't exist if they weren't delicious to a lot of people.
You know? He really shot me down.
I don't know. That's how I view food, right?
It's like I brought a mug to work and he said, go home.
No, I don't know. You know, I just...
Hey, come on.
So many foods for you.
Well, they're all going to make me a meal after this. I hope. So, yeah.
I got to... What do you want to eat?
Are you asking what my last meal would be?
Whataburgers. Wisconsin delicacy.
Really? Wait, did you actually like eat those?
With Whataburgers,
right?
In Texas,
right?
I'd rather have Whataburgers than Whataburger. Whataburger sucks, dude. Sorry, really? For the Texans. Are you both?
I've never had it before.
Sorry.